This morning, I had the good fortune of attending a bris. The bris was in Chicago, and a relative of mine told me that they would be posting it on Hangouts, and if I want to join, I could be one of the people in the conversation. So I didn't know what Hangouts was, but it turns out there's this program that Google put out where you can connect with a lot of people for free and see a video together. One of them points his phone to what's going on, and everyone else can watch. So this relative of mine pointed the phone to what was going on at the bris, and I was connected, and I heard a speech from a survivor of the Holocaust, and he said a few very interesting ideas. He said, the Jews in Egypt were given two mitzvot, the mitzvah of Brit Milah, circumcision, and the mitzvah of the Paschal offering. And those two mitzvot correspond to the two parshiot in the mezuzah. Those two mitzvot correspond to Shema Yisrael and Vayayim Shema Tishme'u. And those two mitzvot are the two mitzvot, the two proactive commandments for which we have a severe punishment, a punishment of karet. Now, what's unique about those two mitzvot? Karet means one is cut off from the Jewish people for the future. What's unique about those two mitzvot? That those two mitzvot represent Kabbalat Ol Malchut Shamayim. When a person circumcises their son, they're accepting the yoke of heaven. For over a millennium, we didn't understand that there were medical benefits in a circumcision. We always had to deal with the Greeks and the Romans and modern doctors telling us that we were mutilating our kids, that it's not good for them. It's only in the last few decades that we scientifically understand how beneficial it is to be circumcised. But you did it because Hashem said to do it. And then so you're making a covenant with Hashem, the Brit Milah. It's a covenant with Hashem. And that's Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. And then you have the mitzvah of the Paschal offering, which is Kabbalat on mitzvot. The responsibility to do that which Hashem commands, which was not simple, because here they had a sheep that they themselves were worshiping for years now, and now Hashem says, take that and slaughter it. That was very hard. Mishchu, Hashem says, pull back from worshiping that sheep and slaughter it. So now they're accepting the responsibility to do mitzvot. So these two mitzvot represent Kabbalat Ol Malchut Shamayim, accepting the yoke of heaven, and Kabbalat Ol Mitzvot, accepting the commandments of heaven. So far, we're all together? Now, he said about himself. He said, we just came out of Pesach, and on Pesach, we're commanded to view ourselves as though we ourselves were liberated. Well, can you do that? He asked the audience. Can you really envision what it's like to be liberated? So let me tell you, a lot's been written about the Jews and the Holocaust and how they suffered and how they lasted during the period of oppression. And a lot's been written about what the Jews did afterwards, but very little has been written about those moments of redemption. There are those moments when suddenly they shifted from being in servitude and their lives being on the line every minute to recognizing, hey, we're no longer there. And that's a moment where Hashem says, the Haggadah says, Chayav Adam lirot atzmo kilu hu nigal. Every person has to see himself as though they themselves were redeemed from Egypt. So we speak about the servitude of Egypt, but do we think and do we try to recreate the moment of redemption? And listening to him speak, he spoke at length, I was struck by a very interesting point that he had told me many times. He said to me that to his mind, the only people who made it out alive of the Holocaust, though he said there were so many people who suffered so hard and there were so many reasons people should die, he said that the people who could last were those who had hope. He said, I told him once a story about people who worked very hard to make matzah or who worked very hard not to transgress Pesach. And they hid food in their socks and in the folds of their pants. And they did a million different things to try and hold on to scraps so that they could do something for Pesach. And he said to me, you don't understand. It's not only a religious thing. It's a psychological thing. Are you fighting for something? And I thought about it. And he's told me this numerous times, that the people who survived were the people who were ready to believe that they can get somewhere. And so they fought. Sometimes they fought to make it to the next Rosh Hashanah. Sometimes they fought to make it to the next Pesach and have a morsel more of potato on Pesach than bread. But they fought for something because they believed there was something to fight for. He ended the speech with a very powerful point. He said at the end, the only reason I'm standing here with the grandson having a circumcision was because I was willing to hold on to the faith of the Torah and the rabbis who teach the Torah, even though everything in my life was yelling against it. Here, we suffered so much because we were Jews, and I was going to lead a life, an observant life after the Holocaust. And here I am, he says, half a century later, I get to circumcise another grandson. But that got me thinking. There's a medrash we all know, and it's a medrash which I never thought about enough. The medrash says that 4 out of 5 Jews died in Egypt because 4 out of 5 Jews could not envision themselves redeemed. They didn't want to leave Egypt. And if we think about it, there's a reason why 4 out of 5 Jews could not envision themselves redeemed. Because we are very strong at experiencing the present. We know very well what we sense now. When the market's depressed, people believe it'll never go up. And when the market's going up, people think it'll never go down. We tend to live in the present because we sense the presence. It's so real. But can we get above that? In his speech, he spoke about the rabbis who spoke to them, who gave speeches after the Holocaust. They had just finished losing their family members, and they could speak to them about a future of a Jewish lifestyle, about Jewish communities. And they built them. They did that. So we each have our own challenges in life. And when we wake up in the morning, very often we have our own frustrations in life. And every person has what they call their peckle. Meaning we're all walking around carrying something. We're carrying issues of our past, issues of our present, issues that we're not sure we'll ever overcome in the future. And I think one of the keys to developing, to doing tshuva, to being happy, is daring to hope that there'll be something better down the road and connecting to that idea. What are we telling our child every Pesach? We're telling them the Jews in Egypt had no chance. And yet it changed. Life changes. Life is dynamic. We have no idea beyond the moment. We try, we attempt, we work. But are we willing to work? Are we willing to work towards something better and bigger? How many people think that Pollard will be out of prison? How many people thought that the Iron Curtain would come down? It seemed an impossibility. When they went protesting in front of the embassies, people thought they were crazy. Okay, a bunch of youngsters, hippies, you know, peace now. So now they're protesting for the Iron Curtain to come down. Let my brother go. Okay, but it worked. It worked. The pressure worked. The international pressure worked. So most people would have thought that the fight to free Russian Jewry would end like Tiananmen Square. A bunch of tanks come rolling down, you kill a few thousand people, Black September. No, history has shown that rebellions don't always work. But look, it did work. The pressure did work. People were willing to fight. And I don't know why our generation is so cynical. And we've experienced the demise of idealism to a large degree. Whereas 40, 50 years ago, the youth, the teenagers, they fought for things, they believed in things, the youth groups were busy with ideals. Today, everyone's busy with their new iPhone. How many friends do you have on Facebook? You don't hang out, but you get Google Hangouts, right? But we can't let that happen. And it doesn't matter what age we're at. One of the great messages of Yetzias Mitzrayim is to have faith in the future and to dare to strive and believe and work at developing. And the fact that we don't see the out, well, the Jews in Russia didn't see the out. I was at the dentist many years ago, and his assistant was a Russian lady. And she starts schmoozing with me. You know, you're an excellent audience when you're by the dentist. You can't say a word, and they could talk to you nonstop, right? So she's talking to me, and she tells me, you know, we came here from Russia, and the day we moved into an apartment, and my father goes out, and he comes home with a yarmulke. And we look at him, and we say, what's that? And he says, what do you mean? All these years I couldn't wear one. I can finally wear a yarmulke. And he comes home with a yarmulke, and we all looked at him like he was crazy. She says to me a few hours later, he tells my mother, there's a shul across the street, I want to go. And we all looked at him and said, you're going to shul? And he says, what do you mean? All the years I wanted to, I couldn't go. So she says to me, none of us connected to any of that. But I have a father who wears a yarmulke, and I have a father who davens, and it's nice. Who would have believed that they're coming out? If you're willing to believe, then you're willing to fight. When you don't believe in a future, then you've already lost. The people who are willing to believe are the people who create the better future. They're the ones who fight for the better future. You know, there was a time in this country when there was one minister in the Knesset that was kicked out so many times, no one believed he'd get anywhere. His name was Menachem Begin. No one believed he'd get anywhere. And then suddenly, there was a change. There was a war. And the people saw that the left wasn't succeeding. And suddenly, with one grand swoop, he came into power. The people who are willing to think about a better future are those that create the better future. 4 out of 5 Jews remained in Egypt because 4 out of 5 Jews could not shift their thought. 4 out of 5 Jews said, I'm here, this is the way it's going to be. I cannot, and they defined their future. When a person decides I cannot be redeemed, he's defined his future. He will not be redeemed. And we all have the things that we'd love to get out of. It can be an addiction. It can be an attitude. We all have the issues that we wish we could overcome. And then it's our choice. Are we willing to think about a brighter future? And when we do, we've taken the most important step in creating that brighter future. And most people kill their dreams by killing their dreams. By deciding they cannot be a reality, that's it. Then they cannot be a reality. It won't happen. And when we decide it can, that's when we start creating it. The first step in creating a better future is the decision it can happen. And most people destroy their future in that step. Now, if you look around you, the world is filled with people who accomplished that dream. Each one in their own right. We had a student who walked into here and told us that there were... He didn't tell it when he walked in. Okay, you want the full story? I'll tell you the full story. We used to live in the neighborhood down the block. And I daven here every so often. So... 1 week, we had a late night Thursday night. We went till 2, 3, 4 in the morning. I don't know when. So that Friday night, I didn't really want to stay and schmooze with people. I wanted to get home, have the meal, and get some sleep. So when they were singing Adon Olam, I slipped out the back door. Okay, I stayed till the end of davening. When they're singing Adon Olam, no one's telling me good Shabbos yet. I slipped out the back door. I go up the block. I get to the light, and there's a student of ours. So I say good Shabbos, and he looks at me. He says, good Shabbos. And he has the somber look on his face. And I'm torn. Do I keep walking and ignore that somber look? Or do I stand and say, what's wrong? So I stood and said, what's wrong? And he points to his shoes. He says, you see these? He says, yeah, what are those? He says to me, these are crocodile leather shoes. You know how much these shoes cost? I said, no, I have no clue. He says to me, well, hundreds, if not thousands of dollars. I don't remember the number he told me at the time. I said, okay. He says to me, I didn't come to Machon Meir to become Jewish. I came to Israel to have a good time. He was Jewish. He was born Jewish. He said, I didn't come to become observant. And then I ran out of money, and a friend of mine told me, you can get a free bed at Machon Meir. So I came to Machon Meir and I got a free bed, I got free food, and now my whole life is upside down. He says to me, I dealt drugs, I sold drugs, I sat in prison. There isn't a person in my life I haven't stolen from other than my mother or my grandmother. He said, one person, I don't remember. He says to me, now I'm standing here looking at these shoes, this is the life I'm used to, but suddenly I'm being presented with a different life. And I'm torn. I've been walking. I don't know. Not sure I want to connect. I don't want to connect. What about tshuva? You know, I had the merit of circumcising his son. I had the merit of dancing at his chuppah. What a tshuva! Person went from being a drug dealer and a thief to being a tzaddik. But he was willing to believe he could change. The guy was a rampant alcoholic. He called me once. He called me at the bris of his son. He says to me, do I have to drink wine? I said, what's wrong? No, he called me Pesach. Do I have to drink wine? I said, why not? What's the problem? He says, if I drink one cup, it ain't going to end with one cup. Now I'm an alcoholic. I'm not allowed to drink wine. What about tshuva? That's his question. But his faith, his determination, his decision, I can make a better future for myself. He said to me once, I used to be in rooms where I was the only white man, and I felt so good there. But now I'm, my life's different. Do we have the courage to say the world's going to be better? How many people walk into their marriage with hopes, expectations, and dreams, only to discover that, hey, it ain't working out that way? At what point do you give up on your dream? That's the point you give up on happiness. The day you decide you cannot realize your dreams is the day you've decided you will not be happy. So long as we're working towards it, we're trying, we're a process, we're going with the wave. Sometimes the wave is over you, sometimes you're over the wave. But you're fighting the wave, so sometimes you catch the wave and you surf. Yeah, part of surfing is falling down, but you got to be willing to try. Otherwise, life is just being hit by waves. And then life can't be happy because life has a lot of waves. Say, if I'm willing to paddle, then I'm willing to work. And you know what? Life is filled with moments where you're ready to give up on yourself. Because when we give up on our dreams, we're giving up on ourselves. So sometimes we say, we've given up on Hashem, we've given up on religion, we've given up on overcoming our habits. What we've really given up is on ourselves. If I'm willing to work, so I'm willing to be a free man. Think of the Jews in Egypt. And the easiest is to give up. It's the easiest in the short run. But in the long run, you have to have the courage to say, I can do this. And even though I've fallen, so that won't take the wind out of my sails. I got to get back up and start again. No one has gone upward without going downward. No one has constant growth. Everyone goes up and down and up and down. And you keep fighting to go up. And life is filled with downs. That's the big problem with biographies. Biographies of giants tell you about their ups. They don't tell you about their downs. How many of you knew that the Rambam had a period of depression? Rambam had a period where he was knocked off his feet. Spent close to 2 years in bed. Couldn't face life. His brother died. I don't know. When you find the source, tell me. I don't know. I don't know. So, big people didn't get there without having big downs. Big downs. There's a big rabbi that you guys quote. I don't know how many of you know that one Shabbos, his Hasidim walked in and found him smoking on Shabbos. Yeah, there's a big Hasidish Rebbe. I didn't say who. There's a big Hasidish Rebbe that's often quoted. But you know what? He had his downs. He had at least one Shabbos. I don't know if more, but he had at least one Shabbos where he fell off his horse. Where he lost it. I don't want to tell you who it was, but you could do a search online. Do Hasidish Rebbe smoking Shabbos. See what comes up. I don't want to be the one to say who it was. But at any rate, big people also slip. The greatness of a person is when they're willing to get back up and say, I'm going to build a better future. And I'm not giving up on the future. And I'm not giving up on myself. But that's where we build. That's when we can be happy.
Rabbi,